Good morning, good morning. How you doing? Sunday morning it is, the 18th of October, 2020. Hope you're in good form this morning. Have you slept well? Are you lying in? Are you up and about? It's the BBG with you for the next hour or thereabout. Sunday View, looking through the papers, you know the way it goes. You can join in as well, you know how to do that. Lovely to be with you, it really is. Ah, well, here, let's do it then.
You're listening to Richie Allen on the UK's biggest independent news radio show. Have your say by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I'm not in too bad form myself now. I'd say I'm in fairly decent form this morning. Had a lovely afternoon yesterday with friends and neighbours watching the Challenge Cup final live from Wembley. Didn't end too well. I'll turn the old song off the theme tune there. Didn't end too well for Salford, for the Red Devils, sadly. Dean Henderson was wrong. Dean. Salford lost the Challenge Cup final to Leeds Rhinos yesterday, 17-16, in a thriller, an absolute thriller of a game it was. And I really enjoyed it. As I said, my friends and neighbours were around, we had a few drinks, we chilled out, and well, you know, there you go. Will we jump straight into the papers then, will we? I was going to talk about the ads on the telly, but I thought I might leave that for another day. The ads on the telly. Not Christmas ads now. I thought you'd be seeing the Christmas ads by now. But there's a lot of manipulative ads on the TV. It seems that every time you watch telly now and an ad break begins, it seems that every other couple featured. So if an ad is featuring a family, every other couple is mixed race. Have you noticed that, or is it just me? I find it very amusing because the last I looked, it wasn't so common for people of different ethnic backgrounds, or from different ethnic backgrounds, to marry one another. It isn't actually that common. But if you watched television in the UK on a daily basis, you might begin to think that pretty much everybody is married to somebody from a different ethnic background. Now that doesn't, the thing that annoys me about that is the manipulation aspect of it. I don't care who gets married to who. The heart wants what the heart wants, as you know, dear listener. I couldn't give a damn. In fact, my second cousin, Anne, married a black gentleman called Harvey from London 20 years ago, and I was at the wedding. Lovely bloke. Was a lawyer, Harvey. Nobody cared, right? Why would they? But if you watch telly now, every couple, mixed race. And I'm like, meh. And even if you watch Netflix dramas, I actually lost my temper during the week last week. The future missus switched on something on Netflix. Oh, we have to watch this, she said. I read something good about it in one of the magazines. It might be good. Grand, says I. Turn it on. Immediately, there was a black dude and a white woman, or a white woman and a black dude, or I don't know. And I just said, turn it off. I've had enough of it. Because it isn't the norm. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying it isn't normal. Of course, it's normal. People find love wherever they want to find it. But it's not the norm. But you'd think so if you were watching the telly these days. Anyway, I thought I'd get that off my chest. It's a Sunday morning. Sunday View is where I get to let loose just a little bit. Let's start with the mail on Sunday. Official MPs did flout 10 p.m. bar curfew. And underneath this, on the front page of the mail on Sunday, it says, but Hancock refuses 30 times to say if he was amongst them. 30 times Matt Hancock was asked, did you? Did you flout the rules? Did you go to the bar after 10 p.m? 30 times. St. Peter is off the hook. 30 times. And if he was asked 30 times, who was doing the asking? Was it Chief Wiggum, was it?
Did you do it?
Was it Chief Wiggum?
Did you do it?
No, it wasn't me. I didn't go near the bar.
Did you do it?
No, it wasn't me.
Did you do it?
No. 30 times, but he wouldn't give an answer. Matt Hancock. That's on the front page of the Mail on Sunday. Katie Bowles, great name, from The Spectator, was on with Andrew Marr on the Marr Show this morning, and she got down deep into this story. Did Hancock, did he Did he flout the rules while telling the rest of us we have to be home in bed by 10 o'clock?
And ultimately suggesting that the health secretary has not been straight with the newspaper. They're saying they've asked him multiple times. We're going, what, you know, into double figures here. And he won't clarify if he went back to this bar in Parliament after voting and therefore breached the 10 p.m. curfew that we know inside government he was one of the biggest supporters of. Can this story keep running? It's quite clear the health secretary does not want to comment on it. I think it's very unlikely he's about to resign over it. And it doesn't look as though number 10 is going to push him. But it does have serious, I think, consequences. The first is we know compliance is a real issue in terms of the rules. So anything which undermines that further is problematic. And Matt Hancock, as the health secretary, is the person trying to get people to comply. So perhaps he should give a fuller response. And then also, I think it just highlights that as the chief dove, in a way, that's how he's seen in this government. There are lots of figures in the Tory party who ultimately do not think favourably of Matt Hancock and I think would be happy to see him moved. And I think we are seeing that in some of the briefings.
Yeah, but replaced by who, though? I love this 30 times thing. The Mail on Sunday says we've asked him 30 times. I love.
Did you do it?
Were you there? Was it you? No, it wasn't me.
Did you do it?
No, I was having a threesome with Boris Johnson and David Cameron. We'll never get to the bottom of it. It probably doesn't matter a damn anyway. That's the Mail on Sunday. Andrew Marr refers to a story in the Health Service Journal. You've probably come across this. That shows that the police are being given test and trace data. What does that mean, Baldy? Well, if you are sent a text message on your mobile phone telling you to isolate, let me rephrase that. If you are stupid enough to leave Bluetooth turned on your phone and to have an app from the NHS in the first place, if you are thick enough to comply with that nonsense, you might get a text to say, Mr. Allen, you were in the presence of somebody the other day who has COVID. You need to get yourself indoors now and stay there for 2 weeks. Right, we know that. However, the police are being given this data. Right? They're giving the data to the police, presumably, so that plod, old Bill, 5-0, will come knocking on your door to make sure you're in. Tyranny. But anyway, who cares? Here's Marr talking about this with Adam Fleming of the BBC Newscast programme. Listen to the two of them.
And so the lesson is we all have to watch very carefully how we behave, Adam. And if we don't, the police will know about it. That's the other big story today. I think it came from the Health Services Journal originally. We can see that on the screen, I think. They don't go for big, bold tabloid front pages, as you can see. But they are revealing that data from the track and trace system collected under the NHS is being passed to the police. And, of course, Adam, it is an absolute legal obligation to self-isolate when you're told to do so.
Yes, although Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, was in front of a parliamentary committee a couple of days ago and confirmed this had been happening for a little while because, as you said, it is the law that you have to isolate if you get a positive test and you're told to isolate, and that can be enforced by the police. So, of course, the police need access to the data. I think what's just happened here is a little bit of a bureaucratic tidying up exercise. But then you've got this tension between people saying...
These two dipsticks now, Andrew Marr and Adam Fleming, they're endorsing this. The journalists are endorsing it. Yes, it's the law.
Saying, well, people might not want to engage with test and trace if they know that their data is going to be passed around and they could be fined by the police. Maybe you wouldn't apply for a test if you were worried about that. But then you've got the other side of the equation, which is only a tiny handful of people actually do isolate when they're told to.
Good.
So maybe you need to toughen up the penalties so
Good.
That people are encouraged to do that.
Good. Don't download the app. Get rid of Bluetooth or turn Bluetooth off on your phone. Don't comply. Don't have anything to do with it. Right. I don't care who's listening. I've been saying it from day one. So the Sunday Telegraph front page, Blair accused of breaking quarantine rules with US trip. Blair was in DC apparently. And 10 days after coming home from DC, Blair was in a restaurant in London and somebody took a photograph of him. So Blair... breaching the guidelines. And that demented bat, the Queen, that horrible bastard, the Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, she was involved in engagements, wasn't she, last week? None of them had masks on. None of them! Did anybody phone the old Bill to say there's a senile old woman wandering around a function without a mask on? So So Blair is being criticised by the Sunday Telegraph. Also on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph is this headline. Tory grandees demand COVID exit strategy from Johnson. Pretty self-explanatory. Senior Tories are demanding that Johnson publishes some sort of exit strategy from a constant cycle of lockdowns. Okay, we're back to Sir Graham Brady, chairman of the 1922 committee, and whose constituency is close to here. It's not too far from here. Altrincham and Sale West in Manchester. Brady says we've got to get past the circuit breakers because they seem to be pointless. Others as well, Lord Lamont, that's Norman Lamont, the former Chancellor, warning that these draconian restrictions being applied and then lifted is deeply damaging to business and isn't really a strategy. So the Telegraph going with the continued rumblings of senior Tories about the draconian aspect of everything we've been obviously witnessing, but also whether they're necessary or not. Okay. Lovely. Marvellous. The Observer. 1 million young Britons face jobs crisis within weeks. Now, this is interesting because The Observer, of course, The Guardian's sister newspaper, The Observer, supposedly a left-leaning newspaper, social democratic newspaper, it's been pushing hard for lockdown, pushing hard for masks, pushing hard for God knows what else, right? But today, it's saying, excuse me, 1 million young people will face a jobs crisis within weeks. The COVID generation will struggle to find work when the furlough scheme ends this month because there isn't any work. How do I know that? Listen to Anne Diamond speaking on Sky News Breakfast this morning.
Of course, we have to cope with what's already, the damage that has already been wrought by the pandemic. And there's a report out, apparently it's going to be published tomorrow, saying that there are almost 1 million vulnerable 16 to 24-year-olds who are now not in full-time education or employment. And then there's going to be an influx then onto the jobs market of school leavers. And then furlough is obviously going to end to support those. And so you've got this whole COVID generation, if you like, of young people who cannot get on a jobs ladder, mostly because there will be no jobs.
Yeah, that's pretty stark, isn't it? Don't sugarcoat it, Anne. Dear, there won't be any jobs. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Good morning to Dean, who's travelling back from Grantham after partying down with 17 people. Burn him! Somebody drop a dime on Dean. Good man, Dean. Hi to David Stanford. No NHS app here. And anywhere I see with that check-in spying nonsense, well, they get swerved. The check-in spying nonsense. Yes, the QR code. That's making the news over the weekend as well. Good morning to Brian. How you doing, Brian? Good morning to Bill Wilson. Good morning, Bill. To Daz in Norfolk. How you doing, Daz? Good morning to Steve James. Interesting story in the Mail. I tweeted a link to it a little bit earlier on. You might have seen it there. The Mail runs a story. The Mail Online, I believe. I haven't seen the paper yet. Exclusive. The picture the world has longed to see. COVID vaccines, and there's a photograph of an assembly line with little vials of liquid, presumably vaccines, in Belgium. And it's Pfizer. Thousands and thousands of vaccines rolling off the assembly line, and the Mail on Sunday proclaiming it to be the picture the world has longed to see. They might be surprised at how difficult it is to persuade large swathes of the population to play Russian roulette with that vaccine. They might just be surprised. It is 14 minutes past. It is Sunday. Let's pause the front pages for a moment. Let's pause, dear listener. Children, let's relax. It's a Sunday. Let's hear Mystery Train from the King of Rock and Roll, whom we love, don't we? This is just wonderful. Welcome to Sunday View. The King. Mystery Train on Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. The time 17 minutes past 11. Good morning to you. Let's check in with the Health Secretary again. The Mail got nowhere asking him 30 times, had he gone to the bar and broken curfew? Let's ask him one more time, will we?
Did you do it?
Now I was having my anus waxed. He was having his anus waxed. Let's move on. Good morning, by the way. Twitter is alive, is it? Is it alive? A lot of things going on. A lot of people tweeting me. Thank you for the tweets. Good morning to Shasta. Good morning to Gatehousery, who says nobody with any working brain cells will subject themselves to a hasty and badly tested vaccine, whatever the pressure to do so is. Surely it's obvious how much commercial pressure there is to rush a miracle cure into circulation, with all the obvious inherent risks. Thank you. Hi to Susie. Susie says, no thanks. No, I won't be having it. Won't be taking the vaccine. I won't be having it. A lot of people won't be having it. Right, let's move swiftly on. The Sunday People leads with a warning on NHS capacity. Now, keep this in mind. Interesting stuff. Interesting interview with Andy Burnham on the Andrew Marr show earlier on. We'll come back. I'll come back to that in a moment. In a moment. Sunday People, lead headline, front page headline, perfect winter storm. The paper alleges that the NHS is facing a shortage of staff, and a lack of coronavirus tests. To make things worse, says the Sunday People, GP surgeries are facing delays of up to a month to get the flu vaccine. I would have thought that was a good thing. But it's a bad thing, according to the Sunday People, that folks can't get their flu vaccine. So big NHS shortage looming this coming winter, says the Sunday People. Staff shortage and a shortage of flu vaccines. Stark warning on the front page of the Sunday Express. Virus circuit breakers would not end. Right. Sunday Express alleges that a Whitehall source, a government source, has told them that the circuit break proposal being pushed by SAGE, now SAGE stands for the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, that the circuit break will in effect lead to a permanent lockdown. So a source, allegedly a senior source, has said to the Sunday Express they are lying when they say, please let us lock down the whole country for 2 to 3 weeks. That lockdown would never end, according to a government source speaking to the Sunday Express today. Okay, we'll come back to that as well in a few minutes. The Sunday Times leads with claims by British woman Caitlin McNamara. She's waived her right to anonymity. She claims that she was attacked by Sheikh Nayan bin Mubarak al-Nayan. Now, he's the Minister of Tolerance, amazingly, in the United Arab Emirates. They have a Minister of Tolerance. Jesus. Yes, Sheikh Nayan bin Mubarak al-Nayan. She alleges that at a book festival, she was assaulted sexually by this guy and has waived her right to anonymity. And it's a big story in the Sunday Times, which I subscribe to. It's 5 pages worth of story there. The headline is Gulf Minister of Tolerance in Sex Assault at Books Festival. I think it was the Hay Festival, I think. Anyway, but also on the front page of the Sunday Times, Hope for Vaccine at New Year. Hope for Vaccine at New Year. Let's look into that. Let's have a squint. The NHS is preparing to introduce a coronavirus vaccine soon after Christmas. According to who? Well, it's Jonathan Van Dam. Van Tam, Jean-Claude Van Tam. Jonathan Van Tam, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer. He has privately revealed that we might have a coronavirus vaccine very soon after Christmas. Santa might deliver it. He was speaking to MPs late last week. He said stage 3 trials of the vaccine created at Oxford and being manufactured by AstraZeneca mean that a mass rollout is on the horizon as early as December. And thousands of NHS staff are to undergo training to administer a vaccine before the end of the year. And the law changed this weekend. Did you know that, dear listener? The law changed to expand the number of professionals that can inoculate the public. So, from now on in, pharmacists, dentists, midwives, paramedics, gardeners, drainage workers, chimney sweeps, milkmen, postwomen will be allowed to administer the vaccine. Yes, most of those I made up. Dentists, pharmacists, midwives and paramedics, don't worry about chimney sweeps giving you a vaccine. So Van Tam gave this briefing to MPs on Monday. Monday, so not late last week, early last week, and said we're very close. The first vaccines will be given to the very old and the vulnerable, which will probably fucking kill them off. Jean-Claude Van Damme probably killed them. But anyway, so we'll vaccinate the vulnerable, but to get everybody else the jab might take us a few more months. So by the summer, we'll all have it. All of us will have the mark of the beast. Yes. Jeremy Farrar, the director of the Wellcome Trust, he's on the SAGE committee, the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies. There's about 30 of them on the committee. 27 of them, including Jeremy Farrar, are Billy Gates' good old boys. They don't have tenuous links to Gates. They have very, very strong links to him. Jeremy Farrar is on the SAGE committee. He wants a national lockdown. Here he speaks with Sophie Ridge on Sky, explains first of all why he wants another national lockdown. They say circuit breaker, dear listener, but they shouldn't be allowed. It's lockdown the bastards want. Here is Jeremy Farrar.
From, I think, a health and economic perspective, I don't think these are separate. I think they're very aligned. I think the best way of reducing transmission and getting the country back to where we were perhaps at the beginning of September, and then making sure we have test, track and isolate working properly, we have the NHS prepared, and there are things coming along the horizon soon. I do believe the vaccines will be available in the first quarter of next year. I do believe that monoclonal antibodies to treat patients and save lives will be available in the coming months. And it's with that context that I think we need to reduce transmission now, and we need to get ourselves back, reset it at the beginning of September as a country. So you've got two approaches here, vaccines and treatment, which are 3 to 6 months away. We've got to get through the next 3 to 6 months as a country in a cohesive way, and we're much better to do that together than breaking off into regional north-south or political divides. Divided countries tend not to deal well with epidemics. We've known that throughout history. Cohesive, joined-up countries that share the same agenda, that's when you make progress in public health.
Right. Okay. Oh, Jesus. I love this track, trace, isolate, vaccinate. It's hilarious. It to me, it evokes in my mind images of some of these dystopian films like The Purge, you know, or there's a recent dystopian movie about a hunt where people gather to hunt human beings. It's crazy. We should rewrite the song Rawhide, shouldn't we? Move him on, head him up, move him in, move him out, move him on. Vaccine. Cut him out, write him in, cut him up. Vaccine. Jesus Christ, huh? This is the world we're living in. There's only so much more of this I can do, by the way. I'll tell you more about that another time. That's Jeremy Farrar, but it gets worse. It gets worse. He went on to talk about Christmas, about Nullag. Will it be a Nullag, Hunna? Will it be a nice Christmas? Will it be a Christmas? Or will we be lonely this Christmas? Listen to this madman. And of course, well, presenter just sits there and says, yep.
Christmas, I think, will be tough this year. I don't think Christmas is going to be the usual celebration it is, and all families coming together, I'm afraid. I wish we could say it was.
Remember that thing I said about not being violent?
But I think we have to be honest and realistic to say that we are in for 3 to 6 months of a very, very difficult period. The temperatures drop. We are all indoors more often. We have the other infections that come at this time of year. Much better for us to be upfront and honest now and say we're in for a really difficult time. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is light at the end of the tunnel in the first quarter of next year with the starting of coming of vaccines and the starting of treatments. But we've got...
We're just going to ruin your lives until you take the vaccine. But if the guy was honest, I'd have more respect for him. Just tell the truth, man, and then we can deal with that, you know. Be different. Be the one guy who says, I'll tell you the absolute truth. We're going to wreck your lives until you take the vaccine. That was fair play to you, Jeremy. Thanks for coming on. What could you say to that as a presenter? Fair enough. Fair enough. Move him on. Head him up. Move him on. Move him on. Head him up. Vaccine. That's where we're going now. Christmas is cancelled, according to Jeremy Farrar.
Got 3, 4, 5 months to get through until we get to that.
We've only got 3, 4, 5 months to get through while the economy is wrecked. while you heard Anne Diamond, a million kids, no jobs, and after the furlough scheme, no jobs at all. Just don't worry about it. The vaccine will make it all go away. Sure it will.
And I'm afraid, yes, Christmas will not feel like a normal Christmas for almost everybody.
I'd just punch
Christmas,
him in the
I
face.
I think will be tough.
I'd punch him in the face, that fucker. I really would. I wouldn't. I don't. I hate violence. I don't condone it. I would lay the guy out for saying that in front of my face. We're going to cancel your Christmas. Are you? Bang. How'd you like them apples? Jeremy Farrar there. I think it's time for another tune. Or will we ask Matt Hancock, was he at that party again? Oh, Health Secretary, were you at the Commons? Did you break curfew? Did you go to the bar too late?
Did you do it?
Let's have something else. Let's have Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. We had the King of Rock and Roll. Let's have the Queen of Soul. This is just terrific.
Chain, chain, chain. The chain of blue.
Yes. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. How cool is that, eh? Love that. Welcome back. Eris tweets. How you doing, Eris? Perfect start to a Sunday. Howling with laughter. What's funny about it? There's nothing funny about this situation, you daft mare. Oh, Christmas is cancelled, eh? Christmas is cancelled. 35 times the health secretary's been asked. He just won't give an answer.
Did you do it?
Did you do it? All right, let's move swiftly on then. It's been a bit haphazard this morning. It's been a bit all over the place this morning, but sure, you'll forgive me. The Grinch. Home Alone 6. The Virus. Manchester standoff, you following this, you are. Manchester, Greater Manchester. The government wants to put Manchester, or Greater Manchester, into Tier 3, the highest level of restrictions. Yes, you've probably been following this, I've been talking about it, on the ORA show. Manchester has been in local lockdown measures for nearly 3 months now. Anyway, rather than tell the government to fuck right off, we're exiting it all now, and I encourage everybody to get back to normal and go back to their jobs. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, is in favour of a national lockdown. But he would be happy for Manchester to be in level 3 if the government spends more money furloughing those people in hospitality and leisure who are losing out. Do you understand that? It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's ridiculous. A guy who would sully the name socialist. Because there isn't a single socialist in the United Kingdom. I'm the only one. Did you know that? That's not a joke, by the way. I'm the only socialist in the United Kingdom today out of 63, 64 million people. I'm the only one who understands what socialism means. These people are social democrats. They're not socialists. They don't understand socialism. This arsehole, pretending that he wants to save people's jobs, Andy Burnham, is saying to the government, oh, we will consent to being stuck in Tier 3, closing all the pubs and the restaurants and the gyms and the casinos and everything else, so long as you give us the money. So long as you borrow the money, that we'll be paying back for the rest of our lives. Yeah. Burnham. We'll come back to him in a moment. Michael Gove, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, squirrely, slippery, slimy little dude, was on Sky this morning. Firstly, Gove said there wouldn't be a national lockdown. No circuit breakers. He said it's unfair because some places are showing very low rates of cases. So Sophie Ridge, the presenter, pointed out to Gove that the chief scientific advisor, Patrick Vallance, Billy Gates's boy, is pushing for a proper lockdown. This is what Gove had to say.
So I just want to have a look at what Sir Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor, said on Friday. He said it is important to go quite fast on this. It's important to make sure that you go hard enough to get the R below one. The sooner you do that, the more you get this under control. For many, the lesson of the first lockdown was that we didn't act fast enough. We dithered. And as a result, we had to lock down longer and for harder. Are we making the same mistake now?
Well, they're making that mistake in Manchester, yes. Because it's perfectly clear from the response, the right response, from the mayor of Liverpool and local government leaders in Lancashire. They recognise there's a particular situation in the northwest that requires action. But in Greater Manchester, sadly, Those steps have not yet been taken. So we're ready to do everything we can, whatever it takes.
Are you ready to
help people in Manchester?
Saying you're ready to do everything it takes, does that mean you are willing to impose greater restrictions on Greater Manchester, even if Andy Burnham resists?
Well, one of the reasons why we've been talking to local government leaders is that we believe that a partnership approach is best. We could have imposed measures before now, but we've talked
to... But are you ready to do it in the future?
Well, we want to reach an agreement, but the real question is for the civic political leadership. Political, actually, is a better word. The political leadership in Greater Manchester.
Are you ready to impose restrictions if the political leadership in Greater Manchester continues to resist?
Well, I want to give them the opportunity. I want to be fair to them to recognise that this is a public health crisis. And that there are...
Very straightforward question. Are you ready to impose if they continue to resist?
It's a question in a context. And the context is this, that I want to reach an agreement with the political leadership in Greater Manchester. I want them to put aside for a moment some of the political positioning that they've indulged in. And I want them to work with us in order to ensure that we save lives and protect the NHS. Because an absence of action will mean, and Sir Patrick is absolutely right, an absence of action will mean more people get infected. As more people get infected, that will place more pressure on the NHS. And the more people, sadly, in intensive care beds in the Northwest and in Manchester who are suffering from coronavirus, the fewer intensive care beds are there for people with other serious conditions. All this is happening as we move closer to the winter. And instead of, you know, press conferences and posturing, what we need is action.
Yeah, we need action, not posturing, he said. So, a few minutes later, the mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, was on the other side. He was on the other side. He was on the Andrew Marr show. I won't bore you with it. You've heard it all before. He said he was... I won't bore you with all of it. You've heard it before. He said he wasn't martyring himself for low-paid workers, or he was martyring himself for low-paid workers. The government can only put us in Tier 3 if we get the money. And then Andrew Marr asked him this. Listen to this.
When do you think that intensive care units in Greater Manchester will be full?
Well, I checked the figures this morning, Andrew. There are currently around 62 people in intensive care in Greater Manchester, give or take. I mean, it's in that ballpark. Back in April, it was over 200, around 220. So we're in a different position. There were 4 hospital admissions of people with COVID to hospitals in Greater Manchester yesterday. So it's
4 yesterday in Greater Manchester. 4 people admitted with COVID, allegedly. We'll come back to intensive care in a moment because it's quite staggering, really.
So it's a serious situation. But
it isn't.
I don't think it was the situation that was described by the Prime Minister on Friday evening.
On Friday evening. Yeah, on Friday evening, Johnson made out like Manchester was on the verge of collapse. Listen to what Burnham says again here. This is very important.
There are currently around 62 people in intensive care in Greater Manchester, give or take. I mean, it's in that ballpark.
Now, if a stroke hadn't shattered 7/10 of Andrew Marr's brain, maybe... And maybe that's a bit cruel, but I don't give a shit anymore. If Andrew Marr's brain wasn't jelly now, maybe Marr would have said, of the 62 people in Greater Manchester. Now, do you understand what Greater Manchester is? Have you any idea? Any idea at all? What it covers? The area of land it covers? The amount of people it covers? No? No? You haven't? Well, I'm going to tell you. And I'm double-checking my figures because I was rushing this stuff out this morning. Let's have a look. Let's double check. Yes, Greater Manchester, just shy of 3 million people. Men, women, children, babies. 3 million, right? Greater Manchester. 62 people in intensive care. Now, if Andrew Marr had a brain left in his head, question number one is, of the 62 people in intensive care, Mr. Burnham, how many of them are in... because of car traffic accidents, or because they stupidly walked across a level crossing, or because, I don't know, they were listening to the radio in the bath, or whatever, or they attempted suicide, compared to how many are in there for COVID? That was question number one, neglected to be asked by Andrew Marr. because he's an idiot. Question number two is, how many hospitals are there in Greater Manchester? How many hospitals? The answer is there are in excess of 30 NHS hospitals in Greater Manchester, meaning that on average, you've got then across the 30 hospitals, the average number of beds in intensive care currently occupied is two. And you can't be sure that any one of those two is a COVID case. Do you understand where I'm going with this? The whole thing from top to bottom is predicated on a pack of lies. And it's so easy to destroy this stuff. But Marr sits there in a daze. Doesn't say a thing to him. 62 people across the Greater Manchester area. 3 million, 2.85 million people. Burnham's Labour colleague, Kate Green, Shadow Education Secretary. She's a Manchester-based Labour Member of Parliament. She was on Sophie Ridge and she said this, and this is important.
Here in Manchester, we've been in a local lockdown of sorts since the end of July. Rates are continuing to rise with the measures we have now. They are not working, so we have to try something different.
You have to try something different? Well, open the fucking place up then, you Scottish haggis. What are you doing in Manchester anyway? It's incredible. We've had, listen to her again from the top. I mean, this is just staggering stuff. We've been locked down for ages and it doesn't make a difference. So, let's have more lockdown. How about not? Listen to this.
Here in Manchester, we've been in a local lockdown of sorts since the end of July. Rates are continuing to rise with the measures we have now. They are not working, so we have to try something different.
But you're not trying something different. You're just continuing to lock people down.
That's the point, isn't it? The restrictions in Manchester haven't worked for 11 weeks, and that's why they haven't been lifted. They've been increased, and that's why people are very sceptical that if you do impose a 2 to 3 week lockdown, it's not going to be lifted after 2 or 3 weeks, is it? You can't guarantee that.
Well, nobody can guarantee what's going to happen in what are the most uncertain and unpredictable circumstances.
So why are you saying but that it should be just 2 to 3 weeks?
Exactly. Why are you saying it's only going to be 2 to 3 weeks, and then you're saying we can't guarantee it'll only be 2 to 3 weeks? And that was the Sunday Express front page story today, that the circuit breaker, the national lockdown, is a massive lie. It wouldn't be 2 or 3 weeks. It would be until next year. It would be. What are we? We're October 18th. There's what, 7 weeks left this year anyway, is there? 10 weeks left, is there, in the year? Around about, say, 11 weeks then. My mathematics isn't great. But, any reimposition of a national lockdown would carry on until next year. It's 17 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to play a tune by Stevie Wonder. When I come back, I'm going to read you the Mail on Sunday's editorial today. And it's long, but it's one of the better pieces of journalism that I've read, that I've come across, that's come across my desk in recent years. I'm going to read you the entire Mail on Sunday editorial when we come back from Stevie Wonder's You Are the Sunshine of My Life. Marvellous little tune on Sunday View with Richie Allen.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
This is the Richie Allen Show, the most listened to independent news radio show in Europe.
Welcome back. Thanks for all of your tweets today. I do like reading your tweets. Thanks for sending them in. Let me read you this. Now, it's going to take me a few minutes to read this, but please listen to it, because you mightn't have access to it. You can find it online at dailymail.co.uk and read it yourself. It's the Mail on Sunday comment. It's the editorial today. Powerful voices now argue for a more nuanced and less painful way of learning to live with the virus. We urge the Prime Minister to listen. Let me read you this, and I'll tell you when I'm finished. This is the Mail. The measures now being imposed on large parts of the country would be severe and hard to bear if we had reason to believe that they would do any good. The trouble is that we have no shred of solid evidence that they will help at all. The vast illogical web of new rules, increasingly impossible to understand or follow, looks worryingly like an exasperated attempt to punish us for wanting to live normal lives and enjoy ourselves. Go to a pub if you are prepared to eat a large unhealthy meal with your drink, but not otherwise. Go to the gym in Manchester, but not in Liverpool. Wear a mask while you walk to your restaurant table, but not while you sit down. It would take the late Professor Albert Einstein to work out the latest combination of regulations on who we can or cannot see, mix with or meet in the open air or indoors. And by the time the great physicist had managed to discover what it all meant, the rules would have changed again. The alleged scientific basis for this is weak beyond belief, as Sir Keir Starmer pointed out, before throwing all reason and logic aside and demanding still more stringent collective punishments, which would incidentally make even more Labour voters unemployed. In 19 out of the 20 places already compelled to suffer under strict regimes, no benefit was observed. And why should it be? When we were first beguiled into this new way of life by an appeal to our benevolence and generosity, we were told that in a few weeks of self-restraint, we would save the NHS from being overwhelmed. Who could resist such a plea? Millions cheerfully surrendered treasured freedoms for the common good, thinking they would soon get them back when the job was done. The NHS was not overwhelmed, and it is far from clear that it ever would have been. But the weeks passed, and what happened? We had a serious case of mission creep. Somehow the task had now become one never previously attempted or achieved by any society. The virtual suppression of the virus itself. We were not free to return to our normal lives. On the contrary, every few days brought a new alleged alarm. A testy and increasingly petulant Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary, did not release us from our bonds. Restrictions applied on the pretext of safety or security. I'll read that again. Restrictions applied on the pretext of safety or security are notoriously hard to get rid of. And these were no exception. Only after immense damage had been done to the economy were we allowed to resume something like normal life. Tens of thousands of holidays were wrecked by sudden quarantine clampdowns. Though no significant evidence has been produced that travellers returning from these supposedly dangerous countries were in fact suffering from or carrying the disease. Hardly were the surviving pubs and restaurants and hairdressers open again, and high streets beginning to function, when the government began to voice fears of a supposed second wave of COVID, and moves to get us back to work were halted. Indeed, the government tried very hard to find such a second wave, launching a highly successful nationwide hunt for healthy people who could be said to be infected by the virus. The key fact about COVID-19, that it is rarely harmful to those much under 70 years of age, and then mainly when they have severe underlying conditions, seemed never to imprint itself on Matt Hancock's memory. He also seemed incapable of noticing that the great bulk of the positive test cases, of which he makes so much, involved people who were and remained perfectly well. The reassuring facts the doctors have quickly learned how to treat the disease effectively, that many hospitalizations tend to be brief, that many people are now recovering after successful treatments, and the use of new and effective drugs were likewise somehow underplayed. Death, though each one is a tragedy, remain at levels far below the totals. The totals they reached at the peak of the first crisis in March and April. In the week ending October 2nd, COVID accounted for just 3.2% of fatalities in British hospitals. COVID mortality levels are still drastically lower now than in the spring. In the week ending April 17th, 18th, In the week ending April 17th, 8,700 recorded deaths mentioned COVID as a possible factor on the death certificate. For the first week in October, the comparable figure was just 321. As we also now know, many of the deaths in March and April followed a severe mishandling of the epidemic in care homes and had little or nothing to do with the lack or the existence of lockdown measures. In fact, an examination of all the affected nations shows no obvious connection between the severity of the steps taken and the number of deaths suffered. The key problem of the episode from the start, that the danger from the virus itself had been overstated, continues unabated. Yet we are once again being accused of misbehaving by the simple action of living our lives. A blizzard of decrees compelled millions to wear face coverings, despite what the government itself had once admitted was sketchy evidence for their benefits. Now, a rise in cases, which is largely attributable to the normal increase in respiratory disease at this time of year, is being used as the pretext for regional shutdowns or for a so-called circuit breaker. In London, scant evidence of a surge has been used by the utterly undistinguished Mayor Sadiq Khan to trigger misery and economic damage among the people whose interests he is supposed to protect. It is this damage, combined with the shriveling of much of the NHS, that makes this continuing foolishness especially hard to bear. It may even be that more people die from postponed or missed treatments than from COVID itself. The strangling of travel and the hospitality industry has not just made life infinitely less enjoyable, it has permanently killed countless brave small businesses and deprived huge numbers of men and women of their livelihoods. Fairy gold, summed up from nowhere by Chancellor Rishi Sunak, may ease the initial pain, but it must be paid for out of the nation's life savings, and it will run out, leaving a bleak landscape of long-term unemployment and shrinking payments for those who suffer it. The Prime Minister can be forgiven for taking what he and we believed to be effective and urgent action back in March. We knew so much less then than we do now, but the time has now come to reconsider. The practical effects of these measures on COVID are sketchy at best. Their effects on human happiness, health, well-being and the economy are increasingly evident, deep, painful and lasting. Especially since the Great Barrington Declaration, supported by several distinguished scientific experts of all political hues, including Britain's own Sunetra Gupta. It is no longer possible to say that science and medicine offers only one route out of this crisis. Powerful voices argue for a more nuanced and less painful way of learning to live with the virus as we rebuild our prosperity and our freedom and look forward to a future free of lockdowns, circuit breakers and family separation. Boris Johnson has the capacity to see this and act upon it. We urge him with all our hearts to do so now. And that is the editorial in the Mail on Sunday today, October 18th, 2020. And that's where I take my leave of you today, dear listener. Thanks for listening in. I appreciate your company as always. I hope you have a lovely Sunday. Whatever you choose to do, if the weather permits, do get outside for a bit. And I'll speak to you again tomorrow, Monday, at 5 p.m. UK time, where Jean-Anne Crowley, the legendary Jean-Anne Crowley, will be among the guests. I can't wait to chat with Jean-Anne on the show again. And I have a lot of terrific guests booked in this coming week as well. Until tomorrow then, as usual, take care of yourselves and one another. Let's close out the programme with the Fab Four. Why not?